session number 17360, Reel 2.
Mr. Keats, Reel 2.
Well, we were given orders to scramble and make our way to the coast. But previous to that, I'd had an order from the adjutant telling me to contact the forward company and tell them to scramble and make their way to the coast as quick as they could to withdraw. So by the time I got back, which was, to be honest with you, I can't tell you how long it took me, because even though it was less than a mile, there were tanks in the way. There were tanks all over the place. And I was alone. And the only thing you could do is keep your head down. And I was under the wall. I was just stayed popped. I didn't move for quite a while, until the opportunity arose where I could move a bit further down. And eventually I got to HQ headquarters. When I got there was nobody there. They'd all gone. There was only one man, and he was very badly wounded. His name was Ellis. Bill Ellis.
Was he on
In other words, his correct name was Lawrence Ellis. He lived in Huddersfield. No, Marsden at the time. He got back, but it was through the generosity of the Germans. They picked him up. I did what I could for him, because I got some hooch, you know, some brandy, and out from the headquarter kit, and I attended his wounds. He was all down the left side. He got his shrapnel, and he was more or less unconscious. So what was left of the brandy I pumped into him, and he just passed out. So I got the bandages, anything I could find, and I attended to him and wrapped him up. But by that time, the Germans were very within yards. The tanks were even yards away. And I wasn't worried about them, actually, because I knew they wouldn't shoot an unarmed man or a wounded man. That we knew. It didn't worry me too much. But the trouble was, I had Lawrence Ellis there, badly wounded, and nothing I could help him with. I had no transport, no other people around, nobody to help. So I don't know what to do. So I thought, well, if I wrap him up, and wrap him up well, they're bound to find him and attend to him, see. Which they did, fortunately, I guess, right. Anyway, I had to leave him. I didn't want you. I could have waited there, and of course I wouldn't have been taken prisoner with them there at that time, but I didn't fancy that at all. But since Bill was in that predicament, he was helpless. So the only thing I could do was just wrap him up, do the best I could with him, hope to God that they picked him up, which they did. So after I attended to him, I made my way under the wall and along the next field. That was on the outskirts of Vale of Roses. And the Vale of Roses, by that time, the Air Force, the German Air Force, had bombed the town, and it was blazing. The whole place was on fire. And I couldn't imagine at that time. I couldn't imagine getting back. I couldn't imagine anything. It was just unbelievable to think that you were alone. And you really had no idea of which direction to go until you saw a signpost. I finally made my way down. And before I saw a signpost, I bumped into a platoon of 3/4 Highlanders, 4th Battalion. Of course, I joined them. So after I joined them, they had a lieutenant with them. So of course, since we had an officer there, everything was, you know, more or less organized. And we made our way by foot, of course, to the outskirts of Somali. By that time, it was breaking dawn, more or less. So we got into an establishment which had been a blacksmith shop. So we put up the brain guns on the tripods and everything, got ready, waiting till the juries came down the road. And I don't know any of the other boys ever saw any other troops, but I didn't. Not at that time. Eventually, a Frenchman and a German come walking down the road with a flag, of course, a white flag. And they asked us to surrender. They said it was useless. We were more or less at their mercy, and the only thing we could do was pack out or we'd get killed. Of course, the officer said we wouldn't even consider it. Go back before you get killed. So they made their way back.
This was a Frenchman with a German?
Of course, they had a white flag, you know. So you would never dream of shooting them. But they were trying, they're asking us to surrender, actually. But the officer said, no such thing. We'll take our chances. Of course we did. And not less than half an hour, we got heavy stuff coming over, you know.
From tanks?
Huh?
From tanks?
Mortars. Mm. Heavy mortar fire took the roof off, and then naturally we scrambled down the road and finished up in a hotel on the seafront at Savory.
Had you done any firing?
Pardon?
Had you done any firing yourself?
Oh yeah, I had then. I had my rifle. And the other boy, there was only about three brain guns. The rest of us had rifles.
Could you see any target to fire at?
No, I didn't.
So were you just firing at random?
No, we didn't fire. Not there. We did when we get lower down in the town. I mean, we expected to see them coming. But these two officers, the German and the French officers, asked us to surrender, and we refused. Naturally, they said, well,
did the German mortar fire cause any casualties to this platoon?
No. Not at that time. There was two hit when we got lower down into the town square. There was a hotel there and we went in there. And we went into the second floor and lifted the windows, opened the windows, and put our brain guns and whatever we had got to fight with, rifles, through the windows. And we're deformed coming again, but no such luck. Heavy fire started then from the tanks. They blew the roof off. Actually, everybody scrambled out. I'll never forget that. It was a scramble. And at that time, two more of the jocks got killed.
How did that happen?
I don't know. It just dropped. I mean, we all scrambled out, and then we moved further down. Down the front, then two men went back later on to see the other two where they were. So they brought them back, but they were dead.
Were there any other units in this town square?
Pardon?
Were there any other British units in this town square?
Not that I know. Not that I saw. I mean, it was very much of a single unit business. I mean, you weren't part of anything because you didn't know where the other boys were. I mean, we were broken up to such an extent. I mean, you didn't know where the other British forces were. I didn't. I mean, after I left St. Valery, after I left Villa Roses, passed through the burning village, I managed to get through and meet these seaforths. And from then on, I stayed with them until we got on the seafront, and we were under the cliffs.
So after the roof of the hotel was blown off, where did you go then?
We went on the seafront, under the cliffs. There were nowhere else to go.
Were you hoping to get a boat?
We were hoping to get something. We were hoping the Navy would come. That's all we were banking on, but they all... Not that we knew, we didn't know. But they'd already been and taken a lot of people off. And when we finally, in the morning time, when we got into the outskirts of St. Valery, they'd already been, you see. It was during the night that these people got away. They were fortunate. But the scrapping that went on during the night between the various regiments or small groups of leftovers from different mobs, I mean, joined together. I mean, whatever you did to save your skin, more or less.
So what were you all doing at the foot of these cliffs?
Well, we were just waiting for hoping that the British would send some help, see?
Did you have anything to eat or drink?
And at that time, they were shelling. The shells were coming over, way out at sea, but we couldn't see any boats, but shells was coming over. But they were going over behind Jerry. They never hit the Germans with the shells because they were too close to us. They were right on top of us. They were up above on the top of the cliffs and we were down below and they were just dropping incendiaries and grenades all kinds of things were dropping down. And of course they were going on the headland and they were using mortar fire and stuff like that. But I mean, so long ago, I can remember various parts of it. And I still can't remember, even today, what I thought at that time. I can't remember. But I can remember going back up on the cliffs into the town again after being caught, after our commander surrendered.
So you were down on the beach, were you?
Yeah. Most of our boys were on the beach.
Were you firing back?
We couldn't. They were up above, see?
So what happened when he decided to surrender?
Well, there was an officer walking along the seafront with a flag, a white flag. And he was telling us to pack up, you know. So that's what we did. I wasn't sorry, I tell you. Because there are a lot of dead bodies around. And I remember one thing, I did remember. There was a small boat run aground on one of the small landing stages on the below the cliffs, and they hit the boat with a shell, and we saw boys diving into the sea out of the boat naturally. So we went, I rushed out with quite a few more of the boys, went out and helped them ashore because they couldn't all swim. They're all so much sheltered for help. However, I brought one ashore and he was one of our boys. He was a Duke, and he's the only Duke I ever saw after that night, and I never saw one after that.
What kind of a boat was it?
A small craft, small fishing craft. But it was, I suppose they're up to the gunnels with the troops, but you see, it had run aground, the tide was down, you see? And he's waiting for the tide to come up again, so he could float the boat and get away. But he waited too long. He couldn't get away. As though quite a few of them got killed in that boat too. But I must say that the jury was very considerate. When he obviously saw us out trying to help these boys out of the boat, he didn't fire at us. Never fired at us. We were fishing them out and pumping the water out of them, you know. Some were have been killed, of course.
Did you know this man from the Duke of Wellington?
Yeah.
What was his name?
I talked to him on the phone. I asked him how he was going on. He was about, he'd be about 8 years younger than me. Stanley.
That might come back to you later. How did the Germans treat you when they came down to you?
Oh, all right. They were good. They were tank people. These tank men, Rommel's men. They were the cream of the German army.
What did they say to you?
They were speaking in English. They all spoke English. The ones I spoke to did. They came and shook hands with me, and we were lucky we packed up. They had to carry on, you know, and give us cigarettes, of course. Not that we enjoyed it, mind. It's a queer feeling. But there's nothing else you could do. I mean, I'm trying to remember the... It's there in that book anyway.
Where did
you can take some of that with you.
Where did they send you to?
Well, they sent us to just outside Sambari. There had been an airport on the outskirts of Sambari that they used for just coastal stuff. Well, they put us on there for a short while, and then they searched us. I mean, you can imagine how long it took them. I mean, I didn't know how many of our people were there. I couldn't even guess. But I knew later, when I read it, you know, the details, I didn't realize there were 600 of us. That's some worry. But mind you, they weren't all there at that time. A lot got away.
Was your battalion part of the 51st Highland Division?
No. It was, yeah. But it was only hours before. It had been taken into the 51st. It was the 46th. Well, we were informed after we left the village in Brittany to join the Highland Division. And so that's why we were going across there, from Brittany across to Normandy. And we had to go to, I need the map to remind me, you know.
As you were trying to think of, you found his Le
Mans. Yeah, and the place,
so let's pick up the story from where you got captured. Where were you sent to first of all?
First of all, we were checked and searched, and they took all your valuables that you possessed, your rings, everything they took off you. Then you were putting fives, ranks of five in a rank, and one long stream of POWs marched on. And I don't know whether I was at the front or the back or where I was. I was absolutely shattered and worn out. I don't know when I slept last. I can't remember.
Were they marching you towards Germany?
No, we went through France, into Belgium, then into Holland, and from Holland they put us in on trains, barges, and various transport into Germany.
Whereabouts in Germany did you go to?
Well, there again, it's a question of memory. He took us to a camp. that had been a previous camp, and they took us there, and there were huts, you know. And by that time, I mean, it took us about 3 weeks, at least. I mean, by that time we were lousy. I mean, I must have been about 8 stone, something like that. I mean, you're as thin as a, yeah, it was terrible. I mean, you had to fight for your food that you did get, if you get any. They're supposed to give you food morning and night, but I managed to get some soup in my tin hat, you know, because I didn't have any other stuff, anything to carry food in anyway. So I took the lining out of the hat, and they put some in the tin hat. And you ate it out your tin hat. That's what I did anyway, because they didn't give you anything until you were in camp. When you finally got to a camp, some went to Lambsdorff, the Stalag 8B. Long before I got there, I was picked up in that place on the march when we went to the first camp. I was sent with about 20 more chaps to work on some roadworks.
From Lambsdorff?
Not from Lambsdorff, no, from off the march. When we got through Holland, through the barges, then from there into this small village in Germany, and now, as I say, I have it written there, but I haven't, I can't remember. I can't remember everything by any means. Precious little, actually. And as I said, they sent, before they sent some on the train in boxcars to Lambsdorff, but myself and 20 others approximately to this working camp.
Did your condition improve?
Pardon?
Did your condition improve there?
Not slowly. Yes, you did get two small meals a day then. You got a, in the morning, you got a ersatz